leaders do not have the privilege of not treating people with dignity and respectfully. And that is something that I say to every leader that I have that, you know, behaves badly. You don't get to do this. This is not an option. If we have the privilege of being a leader, that we need to treat those we lead in an honorable way.
This is the Dignity Lab, a weekly podcast in which we share stories of dignity, its violations, and its reclamation. Your dignity is your inherent worth or value. Dignity is both essential and vulnerable to harm. The good news is that no matter who you are, no matter what has happened to you, no matter what you have done, you can reclaim your dignity. Tune in to hear stories of inspiration, healing, and leadership. Hosted by physician and leadership coach, Dr. Jennifer Griggs.
Our guest today is Madeline Yucht. Madeline is the founder and CEO of the Summit Executive Advisory Group in Boston, Massachusetts. She has been serving leaders through leadership development coaching for over 25 years. We will be talking about the privilege of leadership, the ways in which leaders can behave, for lack of a better word, badly, and how she works with leaders who want to be better tomorrow than they are today, even if they don't yet know that's what they want. Madeline Yucht, welcome to the Dignity Lab.
It's my absolute pleasure to be here with you today, Jennifer.
Thank you. Let's start with what's lighting you up these days.
I feel really compelled to constantly be looking to see what's new and what's next so that I'm fresh and that I look at what the challenges seem to be and what's needed. So I feel like a kid in a candy store. So I will tell you what over the last 6 to 9 months has captured my attention and has been powerful. A book called Positive Intelligence. And what I have loved about it is it made distinctions between coming from judging, being judgmental, and really exploring how much we judge ourselves, how much we judge others, how much we judge the environment, and the damage that it does, both to ourselves, to others, and that you can shift from judgment brain to sage brain, which is shifting from judgment to discernment, which is just more balanced. And it's about looking at things just as they are, asking yourself what can be done. And it just takes you to a place of equanimity. And I believe that if we can get through life with all its ups and downs and all the things it throws at us, with that sage brain and with equanimity, you win.
We've all been told that leaders set an example for an organization's core values and behavioral norms. What happens when a leader fails to do that?
I'm going to reframe the question as, what happens when a leader fails to set positive core values and behavioral norms? They do it consciously or unconsciously all the time. When it's negative, you know, the whole idea of contagion, and they talk about emotions being contagious, so are behaviors. And when a leader fails to instill and model positive behaviors, what they end up creating is what sometimes is known as a dysfunctional culture, a toxic culture, an underperforming culture. It can manifest in many different ways. So yeah, when they fail to be conscious and intentional in setting positive ones, it is highly likely the negative ones will become infused.
What happens if an organization has positive values, but the leader doesn't exemplify those. You know, their behavior doesn't line up. What's the impact on the people around the leader?
I think that's very common, unfortunately, all too common. And I think that that makes people in the organization very frustrated. I think it makes them sad. And it creates a disconnect where people say, well, if this isn't who they are, I'm just going to go into survival mode. And it creates lack of trust. Because when we do not do what we say we're going to do, people tend not to trust us.
You work with a lot of leaders in the C-suite, so people with a lot of power. What are some of the things that you've seen with the leaders you work with?
Oh, I have lots of them. There are lots of them. A big one, a really big one of late that I've had quite a number of leaders get in trouble for, actually, is very disrespectful behavior. And by disrespectful, it means calling people out in meetings and embarrassing them, putting them on the spot, making them look small or stupid or incompetent. What they don't realize, if they're doing that to one person in a meeting, they create a situation where nobody feels safe. They think they're just doing it to the person, but they don't realize they're doing it to everybody. And the minute you do that to one person, no one feels safe. And everybody is wondering, whose turn will it be next? And if it's really bad, then you can lose the trust of an entire organization. And I actually have a CEO who just got fired as a result. So that's a big one. So that's what I call overt, you know, kind of overt damaging. Then there are other ones that are subtle, but cumulatively quite detrimental. You have, you know, lying is a big one, you know, not either overt lying. There's also just not telling everything. And then people find out, and so then they don't trust what you say, and they don't feel that they're getting the whole truth, so then you've lost credibility. Talking about staff to other staff is another way that shows complete disrespect. And then again, everybody says, well, if you're talking about my colleague, then you'll be talking about me to a different colleague. Stealing ideas, not giving others credit. So when a leader is more concerned about them looking good themselves than acknowledging their team is a big one. Favoritism, where it is very clear that they respect or regard some people better than others. Blaming, scapegoating. Those are some. You know, it's interesting. Again, a more subtle one is not listening, in the sense of when a leader assumes they are right and they stop listening to what other people have to say when other people may disagree. And so then again, people stop talking, they stop challenging, they stop giving new ideas. And a leader doesn't realize it, but they've isolated themselves. When a leader behaves in such a way that they do not make people feel safe to express their thoughts, opinions, and ideas, so essentially they are not listening in the true sense of the word, the leader doesn't realize it because they're too busy thinking they're smarter than everybody else. But what they do is they put themselves at risk because they are not getting the information they need. They're not getting the ideas that could move the organization forward. And they're not getting the information that'll help them make better decisions. So they, without recognizing it, actually make themselves less effective leaders.
So I'm hearing isolation and repelling people and yes, not taking in feedback. And the effect that it has is profound in terms of their effectiveness as a leader.
Absolutely, and very few leaders realize it because they are too busy being smart.
So how do you work with people like that?
Well, the very first step is awareness, is having them realize that they in fact do it. And I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with leaders that the first instinct will be, no, it's fine. My relationships are fine. We're good. And I recently did an offsite with a senior team, the C-suite. And I asked a question, which was, what percent of you do you get to offer in this team? And by that, your experience, your ideas, your thoughts. And I just had them on a post-it note with a magic marker write down the percentage. And the CEO is there. And so I then put it on the flip chart. Nobody was at 100. So it went from 90, 80, 70, 60, 50, 40, you know. And the CEO, to his credit, really said, what am I doing that is preventing you all from giving 100%? And it was a great conversation.
You just revealed, right, that awareness you're talking about.
I have found when you say is very important. You know, very smart people who are very successful are very clear or believe that they have a success formula that works. So it takes some evidence, like something like that, for them to see that who they've been and how they've gone about it. It may be good, but it still may have some, it may be good, but not great. And it may be good in certain ways, but it may be a problem in others. And let me just say that this CEO, I was particularly impressed. Every CEO wouldn't necessarily react the same way. But he did. So I was really impressed with him. Like, that's one of the reasons why you do, especially with senior leaders in the C-suite, I do what I call a leadership pulse, which is where I interview their key stakeholders. And I ask three questions, really. And I have found them to be fascinated by the answers. One is I ask all their stakeholders to give me 10 adjectives that in their mind personify how this person shows up. The good, the bad, the ugly. Then I ask what they consider to be their distinctive strengths and the value they bring in their role. And then I say, ask them for suggestions and what would make this leader even stronger going forward. And that's the piece that helps somebody see what might be blind spots, right? They don't know what they don't know. When they see it in black and white, so when I say awareness, I have found being in black and white and having not just one person tell you, but when you see cumulative themes, it's harder for them to be in denial.
They can't just say it's one person.
And that's what people tend to do. You know, if I say to you, you know, gee, you were a little curt when we were in that meeting, I might say to you, well, I was in a bad mood. You know, you think of it as a one-off. You don't think that's who I am. And the leadership pulse, because it's a series of stakeholders all looking at you at different points in time and in different roles. And if the same thing, I have a saying, if the same thing keeps showing up on your plate, you must be cooking it. It's like you can't run away from it. You cannot run away from truth, ultimately. So yes, so awareness is number one.
One of my daughter's college roommates shared with her a post that said, we judge other people by the impact they have on us, and we judge ourselves by our own intent.
I love that. Yes, I intend to be a good person, so I couldn't possibly be doing those bad things. You didn't get to be in the C-suite by being wimpy, and you didn't get to be in the C-suite by not generating results. And so a lot of times the bad behavior comes from what they think their job is, which is to drive results. And that's what they focus on. And they don't always realize the impact that the way they drive results by being tough, being thinking that if you yell at people or you're tough on people or you don't take no for an answer, that somehow you're going to get the results you want.
It's like we have this one-dimensional view of what leaders are.
That's exactly correct. And long-term, it's erroneous. Because if you keep doing that, you get less from people ultimately, not more.
So are you saying that what got us here to a leadership role?
What got you here won't get you there. The way I frame it, oftentimes a success formula, a leader's success formula becomes obsolete. That in fact, what worked in one position, what may have worked in one organization, what may have worked with one, you know, team or group of people, you can't assume that it is going to work under different circumstances, different team, different organizations. So not realizing that and not pausing to rethink, pay attention to the people, the environment, take a pulse. Again, that's why the CEO that I worked with that just got fired, he was there to turn around an organization. That was his job, turn it around. He lost his antenna in terms of seeing how he was terrorizing the people that were there. And they revolted.
It sounds as if leadership development is much like our development at any point in our life, from childhood all the way to adulthood.
That's really well put, and I agree with you completely. Developmentally, it's a new phase, and everybody doesn't realize that they've hit that inflection point that requires a different way of being. And then you just keep doing what you've always done. As you get higher up, you could argue that your job is to bring out the best in others. And one could argue that you're not leading in the sense of you're not leading other people. If you're not doing that, you're managing them as tools. That's all you're doing. You're just deploying them to get tasks done to move your agenda. If you're not really thinking about who they are and bringing out the best in them.
Do you think that as leaders develop themselves and their teams, they can begin to lean back a little?
Yes, that's what they don't realize. It actually becomes easier, not harder, to lead when you do that.
I found that for myself as I developed as a leader. By stepping back and recognizing the inherent brilliance of my team, not only did I get to see their leadership and their ideas, their creativity, their ability to ask and answer wicked problems, I also found that I no longer was doing the heavy lifting. I no longer believed that everything rested on my coming up with solutions. My whole life changed as I changed how I led. We've talked about raising a leader's awareness. How much of your work is focused on increasing awareness?
Some leaders are more self-aware. I have a CEO, and I was really taken by what he said. This is a CEO who's taken a business and doubled it and tripled it, and now it's ready for another hyper-growth double. And he basically said, I realize that I'm at a point now where I cannot be the same CEO I have been for the last 10 years, but I do not know who that CEO is. I don't know what I have to learn. I don't know what I have to give up. I don't know how I need to be different to be the CEO that this business needs now. That was pretty profound. He's like, I need to think this through. I need to think this through. And I said to him, I actually think you are the last person who can give you counsel. Let's start with the people you're leading. I think they may know just what you need to stop doing and start doing to lead differently. He was used to doing everything himself, including thinking and coming up with the solutions.
It's as if he was a closed system and needed to open up the system.
Yes. Beautifully said. Yes, he was a closed system. And that was true about who he needed to be. It was true about how he was thinking about restructuring. He was in his head. And he thought his job was to always have the answers by himself. And he exhausted himself. For other people, it may be other behaviors that have to shift. Then there's mindset. Am I open to this? You know, what am I committed to? What am I willing to do? I mean, you have to really think about, as you say, being more open. So there's mindset. Then there's really thinking about specifically what are the actions that are required. Then you have to practice and get the muscles. So you're increasing your ability. And then there are other things you have to learn. So specific, you know, skills. So I would say in my role, it's all five. It's all five, but the portfolio of those five, which is awareness, you know, kind of acumen for frameworks, ability, attitude, you know, it varies in terms of where you focus and where the people are stronger or weaker.
How do you think leaders can avoid falling into some of these behavioral traps that are so destructive and isolating?
First, it goes back to awareness. You know, who am I? But then there's an exercise I do with leaders, which is, let's call it their own personal mission statement and guiding principles, where they very consciously and intentionally declare, who do they want to be? What are they committed to as leaders? And so it's an exercise I put leaders through to anchor them. And it's a way they can self-manage and ask themselves, am I really living into the leader that I say I'm committed to being? And then some leaders who are enlightened and courageous will actually do check-ins, you know, and monitor themselves and try to get feedback and course correct and or self-monitor.
So there's some awareness and mindfulness, it sounds like, being very intentional about what you're doing.
Oh my goodness, mindfulness is probably the headline, right? Am I intentional and am I mindful, or am I a reactive leader? Is it just whatever mood I'm in today, or is it who I've decided to be?
What's the role of self-care for leaders?
Wow. That is a really important and profound question. And I think one that most very high-performing, high-achieving leaders don't feel that they have permission to do that. Somehow in our culture, it's work, 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 the Puritan work ethic, and that self-care is indulgent. I'm dealing with leaders, which is almost all of them, that are exhausted, don't feel that they have the time to think, feel stressed. Bad behavior comes out when people are stressed and overwhelmed. It's a vicious cycle, and they are not at their best. So is really having to get a leader to understand that if they're not taking care of themselves, they can't possibly be the best leader available to them. If they're not calm, if they're not healthy, if they're not sleeping, if they're not giving themselves time to think. So I think it is undervalued, because there's nobody that disagrees with it. The minute you say it, they go, yes, I know I should. So there's a sense of it, but there's some, you know, competing challenges or competing commitments in gardener's work, right? Which I think just keeps people working hard and driving, 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 as opposed to thinking about wellness. What do you think?
I know when I'm overextended, I don't listen as well. I sometimes feel compressed, like I'm trapped. I found a few yellow lights that can tell me I need to practice restoration. If I find myself interrupting, if I'm not getting out for my daily walk, if I'm not spending time reading or time with my family, I know I then need to go about intentionally creating time and space for those essential things in my life. It can sometimes take a while, like a week or two, to create that time, but at least I can see the yellow light before I run through a red light.
I understand. Yeah, I get it. What's interesting about what you're saying is look at the point we have to get to, right? So what it means is that we're not doing it along the way. I do the same thing, you know, where we just use up all of our energy, and it's only when we're depleted and feel like we are really at the edge that...
Yeah, when we're running on fumes.
Yeah, yeah. That's when we take care of ourselves, when we're on fumes or sick.
So let's say a leader recognizes that they've violated somebody's dignity, or they get the awareness that can trigger shame. And I also have been asked, if I want to change the way I lead, how do I do that without diminishing my credibility? I don't want to be seen as soft. I still want to be the leader. How do I change course?
What your question surfaces for me, first place I would go, is the definition of powerful, the definition of credibility, the belief system, going back to attitude, like the belief system that of, you know, what is being soft? Is being soft? What is being soft? I would say. So if, think about the people you respect, think about the people, they're just honest. And they don't make believe. We think we're opaque. And so then to, you know, show, we think, okay, I need to show I'm strong. And I need to, you know, say, okay, we're going to get this. Instead, and so we think that means strong. And then that means we're going to let people know we're going to go after it. Versus, hey, look, what we've got in front of us is hard. And we're going to take it. We're going to take it one step at a time. Is that soft? No, it's real. And recognizing that there is, that being real is 10 times more powerful than puffy, you know, or fake strong. And that when somebody is a blowhard or somebody is always pushing or always negative, somehow people that do that don't realize that people become numb to it. And again, they become less powerful, not more powerful, because you can't discern anymore when it's really important or not, if everything is important. And you can't discern how upset they are or not upset because they're always upset. So I think a lot of leaders don't recognize that model, that old, you know, the old model. The authoritative kind of military model doesn't work long term.
How would you advise a leader who gets this awareness and says, I need to have a talk with my team that I'm changing? Oh, I'm the problem. How have you coached people who have to go and make repairs to the relationship?
I've had quite a number of them. There are times when I suggest that they do it one-on-one. There are times, for instance, especially when they do 360s, when they've asked their teams to give feedback, I think it is disrespectful to not say, this is what I saw and this is what I learned. And I'm going to just say, this is what I've learned, and this is what I'm going to be doing. And you actually invite them to be partners with you and say, you know what? I am committed to it. I realize the impact. I apologize, you know, for whatever damage, or if I've done it, that was not my intention. I am going to do my best to try to get better, you know, and I'm going to have a partner who's going to kick me under the table or, you know, whatever it is. So sometimes it's in a group and sometimes it's one-on-one. So it can vary.
Can you tell me a story about a time it worked?
Let's see. This was, again, a CEO who, and this is interesting because they'd been there a long time. They had a team that had been with them. And they absolutely respected the CEO for their passion and their commitment and their hard work. So in that regard, they did have relationship equity. But at the same time, this person could get moody, could get testy. And so it took energy at times to be with them when they were in their mood. And the question I asked was, how often are they their best self versus their moody self? That was the answer that shifted this CEO when they saw that they were, it wasn't 20-80, it was like 50-50, and that there was a piece that was walking on eggshells. So they went back to their team. They were very transparent. They said, This is what I realized. And I am going to be, you know, practicing self-management. Then at my end, I'm teaching them self-management. I'm teaching them self-awareness. This person, it was about wellness. Go exercise, rest, you know, because what is it that triggers your moodiness? What triggers your stress? Those kinds of things. So it's how do you handle your team, but then how do you handle yourself to actually do it?
To say that to your team takes courage, I think.
Yes. But again, this goes back to you're not opaque. They already know who she is, right? This isn't me. It isn't this person telling them, listen, I think you should know I'm a jerk at times. They already knew that they were a jerk. It was really just saying, I get it. I now know what I do to you, and I didn't realize the extent.
I can see the advantage of explicitly marking such a change rather than just making the change without saying anything, without cluing people in.
Well, it's actually funny you say that because I will tell you, there was a leader I worked with who was the head of a sales organization and was getting coached, and there were behaviors that they wanted to adjust. And so at their next call with their national sales team, they were behaving differently. Apparently, during the call, all of the salesmen were texting each other saying, what the hell is going on? Because he was being so different. So rather than him saying, hey guys, look, you know, I'm going through coaching and leadership training. These are some things I'm trying out. This is why. And this is what I've learned. Instead, he just dove into new behaviors and they didn't know what the hell was going on. So I think it's actually very important for leaders to own it, say it, and otherwise people just are confused and you're getting the exact opposite impact that you would want, which is engagement, commitment, alignment, partnership.
That feels really important and maybe counterintuitive.
Yes.
And it's good role modeling too.
Yes, very much so. Because if you do that, then you let your team, your stakeholders, your colleagues know that it's okay for them to share with you.
And to work on being better.
Exactly. What can you imagine? I mean, everybody gives verbiage to being a learning organization and to evolving as a leader. But the truth is, very few people and organizations actually practice the actions that it takes. And one of them is sharing what you're learning, talking about what you're learning, talking about what you're working on.
In every way.
In every way. And if we did that, people wouldn't be so afraid of it and it wouldn't take courage. I could argue that our job is to make it not need courage so that it's safe.
And it's the norm, not the exception. So let's say somebody's listening to you now and they work for one of these people. What would you, you know, what kind of guidance or advice could you give them?
There are a few different ways. One, not in the heat of a moment, but let's say somebody called you out in a meeting. You know, and this might take courage because they may be, you know, your supervisor, but going in and saying, look, I just need to share something with you. I am completely open at all times to feedback. I want to be the best I can be. I want to be of service and add value. But I have a request going forward that if you have something to say to me, please do not call me out in a meeting and please speak to me in a respectful way going forward. That's all. So you're not, you know, you're making a request. You're just saying how you felt. You're not putting yourself in jeopardy of losing a job because you're not coming in gangbusters. So I know a number of leaders who have actually shared with me that it was a direct report that made them open their eyes. And I think that when we don't do that, that's part of why leaders keep doing it, because nobody says anything. So my advice, and I say this, if we don't say anything, we are in collusion with the dysfunction and we reinforce it by not saying anything. But I do recognize that that takes courage for some people. So that's one. If somebody is really bad and an entire team is suffering, I sometimes recommend that the entire team, you know, go to the leader and say, these are some issues that we're really struggling with. Depends on the leader, depends on the team, depends on the circumstances.
Have you seen that work? You mentioned one person whose direct report helped them turn around their leadership style.
I've seen that work. I mean, the most extreme case was a group where the leader apparently had drinking issues. I mean, they could smell alcohol, but nobody knew. So it took quite a while. But finally, after a series of things that this person did, they wrote a letter itemizing everything that this leader did. Maybe 2/3 of the team signed it. They made copies and they walked it to HR. They walked it to the CEO's office. And, you know, there was an investigation and the person was let go. So I think it depends on how extreme, you know, a situation is. But if it is extreme, nowadays, you know, organizations are legally bound not to allow hostile work environment. Most organizations take action and call the person out.
So it sounds like you're saying leaving would not be the right thing to do.
Certainly not you if you love your job or you love the place or it puts you at a disadvantage. And again, it depends on, you know, there's a difference between I don't like my boss, they're annoying, and then egregious behavior. Egregious behavior, you have recourse in an organization. Bad behavior, you can go and have a conversation. If they then clearly show that they don't give a damn, then that's a different. But I think it's always worth a try. Listen, but isn't that true in business and personally? Think about personally how many relationships we have with siblings, friends, etc., and we don't say a word. We never say what we need. We don't tell people that they upset us or hurt us. So I just think that it's a little bit of a behavior that we human beings, you know, tend not to like to do.
Yeah, we avoid conflict. And it doesn't mean the conflict goes away, does it? It's still there. It sounds like you're advising people to give the other person the benefit of the doubt, that they don't realize they're doing this.
You can just say it as, this is what's true for me. I just need you to understand this is how I experience how you're speaking to me, or this is how I experienced our meeting. And this is the impact. And this is, you know, what my request would be going forward.
These are the fundamentals of having important conversations. observation, impact, request. Yeah.
Most people don't have the conversations because they're usually thinking about what they're going to say from an emotional point of view. And then they get afraid of what would come out of their mouth. And it's true, right? If we speak from our emotions, we will get ourselves in trouble. So if you ask in the heat, if we get the heat, but that's why if you ask me, what do I suggest? I tell people, you know, let the dust settle if you can and think about what you'd say and how you can frame it in a positive way. I mean, the ultimate joke would be is if you go in like gangbusters in a not positive way to tell somebody they weren't positive. One of the things that I say all the time is that leaders do not have the privilege of not treating people with dignity and respectfully. And that is something that I say to every leader that I have that, you know, behaves badly. You don't get to do this. This is not an option. If we have the privilege of being a leader, that we need to treat those we lead in an honorable way.
Madeline, I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for being on the Dignity Lab.
I love talking to you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Dignity Lab. Did you see your own habits and things you'd like to change as you listen to this episode? If you work with a leader who exhibits some of these behaviors, did you hear ways to help them uplevel their leadership no matter who you are in the organization? How can self-awareness and courage change the way you live and lead? What are your yellow lights that tell you you need a break from work, that you need to create space and time for yourself? We'd love to hear from you. Visit our website, www.thedignitylab.com, to send us a question or comment about today's episode or any episode. Next week on the Dignity Lab, we'll be talking with Michelle Burnaby. Michelle is a nurse with a wealth of diverse clinical experiences. She's the founder of Moral Health and a scholar of unlearning. We'll be talking about the ways in which canceling people, cancel culture, has the exact opposite effect of what we want to see. We'll be talking about accountability in healthcare and in business, and the things that keep us from taking accountability for our actions. We'll also talk about the role of working with our shadow. We hope you'll join us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review us and share with someone you know. This helps us build our audience. And if you leave a review and send a screenshot to jennifer@jennifergriggs.com, we'll send you a small gift.
This has been the Dignity Lab with Dr. Jennifer Griggs. If you have experienced a dignity violation or have a dignity dilemma and want to be a guest on our show, contact us through our website, www.thedignitylab.com. Guests may remain anonymous. And if you're a leader wanting to uplevel your leadership with a small community of like-minded people, please visit our website to learn more about our group program for leaders. Our website also has free downloadable resources. More information about our guests can be found in each episode's show notes. This season of the Dignity Lab is produced by me, Vanessa Aaron. Pete Carty is our audio engineer and sound designer. Casey Frenette is our executive assistant. And Chase Miller composed our theme music. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The content discussed is intended to explore and raise awareness about dignity. Sensitive topics may be discussed that could evoke strong emotions, so discretion is advised. Listeners are encouraged to engage with the material with empathy. Remember, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars.